So, what can I tell about cremation? I'm actually was very impressed by previous talks by Kyoji Matsumoto and Marina Romanova about jet production, and I'm a little bit confused because they produce nice jets. They have growing towers and so on, everything is nice. But I have to start my talk with complaint that everything is bad. So, among the problems which are connected with the problem of jet production and observation of jets, there are a few of them, and I will focus on the problem of collimation. And more specifically, on the problem of the magnetic collimation. Almost everybody knows what's that. When we have outflow from a rotating object, the toroidal field is generated and we get the Lorentz force, which is directed to the axis of rotation, and this force collimates the outflow. Why this mechanism is especially interesting for us? The answer on this question is in the so-called Hay-Ewert and Norman theory. What is that? This theorem claims that if we have some object which have three properties, it rotates, or at least some part of this object rotates with non-zero angular velocity, the object is magnetized and ejects wind. In this case, at very large distances from the object, which much more larger than the characteristic size of the central object, we will inevitably obtain cylindrically collimated outflow together with radial outflow. Of course, all this will happen provided that the ideal MHD is not violated and the wind outflow is not terminated by the interstellar medium. I will tell it slightly later. Of course, this theorem was proven for axisymmetric case, but actually the meaning of the theorem is wider. So, why this is important? Because very wide variety of objects which produce jets, it's difficult to avoid impression from observation that there is some general mechanism which produce, which provide us a collimation of the outflow. And it is looks attractive to have some general mechanism which will provide the collimation of the outflow. And it seems that this mechanism of magnetic collimation very well fits this expectation because it demands almost nothing, because all the astrophysical objects rotate, all of them are magnetized, and almost all eject wind, except maybe moon. So that is why it's really very interesting. And let us make a look what is the physics behind this theorem. Actually, the physics is very simple. Let's consider very briefly why the collimation is really inevitable. Let us assume that actually collimation at large distances, when the flow is supersonic, does not occur. In this case, we very quickly come to the contradiction. So let us assume that the flow expands radially everywhere, but central object is rotating, so that is why the toroidal magnetic field is generated and it falls down as one R. Density falls down as an R minus 2, and the electric field electric current density falls down as minus R squared. So in this case, in for simple Newton equation for the curvature of the field of the flow line, give us that the curvature of the flow line should fall down as 1r. In this case, we see that the turning angle of the flow line should fall down the derivative of the angle along radius will fall down as 1r, and this means that turning angle will arise as logarithm r. So it should grow without any limitation. And this means that our assumption that there is no collimation in such wind is certainly incorrect. But also we have this theorem which promises us that we will get collimated flow at large distances. Of course, this theorem says us nothing about at what distances it happens, how large will be how large will be the fraction of the total flux which will be collimated and jet, and so on, so on. So to answer this question, we need a simulation. And I would like to stress that since we deal with some intrinsic property of the magnetized outflow, intrinsic property in the sense that the magnetized outflows from rotating object will be collimated inevitably, what is the nature of the central source? Is it accretion disk, star, or something else? It does matter. What is important that the central object rotates, magnetizes, and there is wind from it. In this case, it's possible and reasonable to study the mechanism of the magnetic collimation in the simplest model as possible. And the simplest model in this case is a so-called split monopole model, which looks like this. We have, for example, a star and radial outflow from this star. Star initially does not rotate, and there is a wind and a monopole-like magnetic field, which have one direction and upper hemisphere and opposite direction in the lower hemisphere. There is current sheet, which divides this magnetic field with different polarities. And the flow crosses the fast mode surface at some distances and becomes supersonic after this radius. And it is convenient to measure all the dimension geometrical variables in these values, fast mode radius, initial fast mode radius in this model. And the advantages of the simplicity of the model is that all the flow is defined by only two parameters, even for the relativistic flow. These parameters are sigma, this is very familiar for everybody. This is actual ratio of the fast mode surface to the light cylinder squared. And the second parameter, this one, this is ratio of fast mode to the light cylinder and divided on the factor. It's connected with the sigma by this relationship, where this value is the four initial for velocity of plasma. So it's important to mention that in the non-relativistic limit, sigma goes to zero, but alpha remains finite. And so in the non-relativistic limit, we even have a more simple situation because all the flow is defined only by one parameter. And it's easy to separate the situation on the value of parameter alpha. If alpha is less than one, these are small rotators, so they are not very efficient. Okay. And alpha larger than one are fast rotators. So for investigation of the plasma flow and process of the magnetic collimation, we use a numerical simulation, which consisted of two steps. First one, in the nearest zone, we simulate time-dependent problem while we did not get a steady-state solution. And at large distances, we perform a numerical calculation of the problem to infinitely large distances, solving a so-called initial value problem. So everything was solved correctly from the very beginning to the far end. So this is the example of non-relativistic flow in the nearest zone for parameter alpha 0.5, and we see that even for this not so high alpha, we have well visible collimation of the flow not so far from the central source. But when we come to the relativistic case, we obtain the following solution. For alpha 1, we see almost nothing. This is the solution in the nearest zone. And at large distances, we have purely radial outflow, no signature of climation. This is the solution for alpha higher than in the previous on the factor of 4. And there is some small evidence of collimation, but at large distance, again, we get practically radial outflow with some small signature of the collimated flow along the axis of rotation, but it's very, very small. So the question arises why the collimation, the process of collimation in the relativistic plasma is so so non-efficient. Usually people answer on this question, well, as following. Well, in the relativistic case, in non-relativistic case, we have only one force, Lorentz force, which collimates plasma to the axis of rotation. But in relativistic case, we have also a Coulomb force, which is comparable with the Lorentz force, and that is why it affects in the opposite direction. That is why the collimation is smaller, less efficient. That's of course correct, but actually this is not the answer on the question. Let us again consider the situation more carefully. What actually happens? Again, we consider the usual equation of motion and equation for the curvature radius of the flow line. So this is a conventional Lorentz force minus Coulomb force. Okay, this is correct. But in this term, where we have to write down the momentum of the plasma, we have to add this term, which corresponds to the momentum of the electromagnetic field. And this is important thing. Actually, this is physically it's very clear, because not only plasma have inertia, but electromagnetic field also have inertia. And for high sigma flow, this term is much higher than this one. And we have to take into account this term. And what we get finally, after simple manipulations, we get the following, that all this is driven by the sigma, this is clear, and it's divided on the square of the 4 velocity. This is term appears just from the subtraction of the Lorentz force and electric field force. But here, additionally, we get the this term, which arises from the Poynting flux. And finally, we arrive to the following simple estimate of the collimation distance, which looks like this. And it's easy to understand the importance of this term. If we will take into account only the role of the Coulomb force, we will get the same formula, but without this term. And for example, it's easy to estimate that, for example, for Krapp pulsar with sigma of the order 10,000, and initial Lorentz factor 100, we should get a collimation already on the distance of a few fast mode radius. But it does not happen because this term works, and we get at the high sigma some kind of saturation. So at high sigma, the collimation process already becomes, does not depend on the angular velocity or magnetic field at all. So these terms cancel each other. And estimates in this case show that, for example, collimation radius for such object as a Krapp, for wind of the, from the Krapp, is proportional to this huge number, which means that's infinity. If we consider a typical number for AGNs, we get also rather larger distance for the collimation of the flow. And this is explains why we have so non-efficient collimation in the relativistic case. Again, I have to stress this point that the non-efficient collimation of the relativistic plasma is explained by two factors, not one. First one is the role of the Coulomb force, and the second one is the inertia of the electromagnetic field, which suppresses the collimations. I will tell later. So, estimate for HGN shows that if we have not very high Lorentz factor, even for high sigma, we could get collimation not at very large distance. But there is another problem. That the problem is that even if we obtain the collimation, but the fraction of mass or fraction of mass which will be collimated into the jet will be too small for our simulation shows that we get 10 to the minus 3 fraction of the mass which is collimated into the jet. This is too small. And the question is what to do with this? How to collimate relativistic plasma even for not very large Lorentz factor? And our analysis shows that one of the way to do this is to come to the more complicated situation and to consider two component model, which consists of the central source which ejects relativistic plasma initially. How it happens, I don't know. And the second component is accretion disk in any form. What is important that this accretion disk ejects non-relativistic magnetized wind. In this case, the idea is the following, that, okay, the relativistic wind very weakly collimates itself, but non-relativistic wind from the disk could collimate the relativistic one. And the idea of the next work was to check, is it possible to some way choose a parameter of the system to obtain a jet which will be comparable with the jet from one of the objects. For example, we choose a very famous jet from M87 and try to calculate the situation for this object. What we did, we take initial surface where we launch a jet with the given parameter on the distance 100 gravitational radius, it's this cycle, and then eject plasma from this surface in relativistic plasma in this cone as it's observed by VLBI. And we also have a flow of non-relativistic wind in this system. And let's see what happens. So these are parameters for the problem. What is important here, that these are actually more or less typical parameter for HGNs. And what is important that at the distance 100 gravitational radius, we use only one Gauss poloidal magnetic field. So it's quite well consistent with typical estimates of the for the HGNs. So this is initial configuration. So this is initial surface where we launched the plasma outflow. Everything is not collimated. There is a radial outflow of relativistic plasma and radial outflow of the plasma from the disk, which is somewhere here. So this is what we get at the distance 100 parsec. And we see that everything which was ejected from the central source was collimated into the very well jet, and this is what we have at the distance 1 kiloparsec. And if to compare with the observations, we have the dependence of opening angle for M87, this point, and this is our curve, which looks not bad if to take into account that we did not did special fitting or something else. So the conclusion that in one component model, indeed, we are not able to provide essential energy flux and mass flux into the jet. And to produce relativistic jet, we propose to consider two component model. And from the talks yesterday and today, and we see that this is a rather reasonable approach to the problem. And it is interesting that we come to the same conclusion just from another argument, just to collimate plasma, relativistic plasma, we have to have these two components into the in the system. And the second conclusion that what is interesting that we firstly show that we can obtain reasonable jet which are comparable with observation using conventional parameters at the launching point of the jet. And maybe the last comment that maybe it's interesting to make another view on the so-called jet disk connection problem. That it's very well known that when we observe jet, we always have a disk in the system. And there is general point of view that this means that jets are ejected from the disk directly. But we see that the situation could be another, and jets are not produced from the disk directly. Jets are ejected from some central source, but disk is really necessary because it is disk which collimate the central outflow from the central source. That's all. Thank you.
So in the two-component calculations, asymptotically, you have a non-relativistic outflow surrounding the central relativistic outflow?
Yeah. But of course, it's necessary to understand that if to take into account surrounding interstellar medium, of course, at some distance, the non-relativistic wind will be terminated. So after that, we will get...
But it's just... It's pushing up against the relativistic
outflow. But, you know, it is enough for collimation distance in one parsec. After that, we don't need the wind from disk. It's 4 kiloparsec, but I show 1 kiloparsec, so I have figure with large distance. So if you are interested, I will show you.
Yeah, I guess there's obviously a difference between your results and the simulations that we've seen, which was also alluded to by Antonelli, with respect to the ability of the relativistic thing to self-collimate. And I just wanted to ask you more about that. Is it possible that in the simulations, I don't know, that the ambient, that there's a boundary condition or something which is acting effectively as the, you know, the ram pressure in your non-relativistic wind? Or is there some insight that could be shed on why the simulations, more on that issue, I guess?
To be honest, I do not understand exactly your question, but let me to tell something. What is the difference between our simulation and the previous simulation?
That well, the ones that show the magnetic towers, which you started out with your talk.
Yeah. Thing. The point is that, okay, I will not show. The point is that in our simulation, we have everywhere after fast mode surface supersonic flow. And this supersonic flow does not depend on the outer boundary conditions. So it's not affected. If we put something there, stone or something, there will be shock wave and that's all. So the flow does not depend on the boundary conditions at all. That is the one of the...
So the question then goes to the other simulations. Do those depend on the boundary?
Yeah.
Andre, back.
Big question. What's the ratio of the luminosities of the jet and the non-relativistic outflow you would need to reproduce the data, for example, for M87?
What the ratio of?
What's the ratio of the? You have two energy outputs, right?
Yeah.
In two forms. If I have zero for the non-relativistic outflow, it wouldn't be able to collimate the jet, right? So there is a minimum luminosity you would need to collimate the jet.
What we did, we specified mass flow in the jet, 10 to the 24 gram per second. And what we did, we specified mass flow in the wind, which actually 10 times more. But actually, it was only technical reason why we specified mass flow in the disk wind higher, because we need to have more or less the fast mode position of the fast mode surface in the same distance. So we could have less. But if to compare energetics in the wind, disk wind is much less than in the jet, because the initial velocity in the wind only one-third of the light velocity, and in the jet, the Lorentz factor, I did not mention that we launched a jet, hot jet, so the temperature at the base was 3 times mc squared. So that means that together with the thermal energy, the energetics of the jets higher than energetics.
Which is a little surprising, because if you have collimation, you have significant energy density in the jet. So it's strange if low density surrounding is able to collimate it. But anyway, we could discuss it later.
Still raises the issue of why we don't see any
Well, a new ingredient is invoked, the non-relativistic outflow, which has sufficient inertia to But wouldn't you expect to see this matter flowing out at non-relativistic speeds, a lot of it, in fact?
An outflow. There are broad emission lines, and this rollover in the power spectrum of the X-ray emission, suggesting quite substantial outflow from this. In NGN, you have a broad line region, and you know, so I mean, this material may be cold, but I mean, it doesn't need the hot material. It may be cold wind. Magnetized cold wind.
Excuse me, let me to comment, to say a few words about, because the energetics in the wind could be much less than in the jet itself, and much less comparable with the luminosity of the central engine or so on, so it could be very difficult to observe this.
In AGNs, a cold, quote-unquote, cold wind is the rule rather than the exception, as far as observational evidence goes. What is a radio galaxy? I don't know. I could not say that for M87 specifically. Yeah.
Are on wholly different scales, in wholly different places, with wholly different kinematics. They won't do the job that's required here.
And I think there is enough uncertainty as to where the wind is, or where does the observational signature originate, that we cannot rule it out. So the observational signatures I'm thinking about are absorption lines in resonance lines in the ultraviolet that appear to be a little blue shifted compared to the rest.
The warm absorber situation. Do I really need a microphone? For posterity, all right. Right. Actually, Mike, the warm absorber story is in fact converging, and I think there is a general consensus now that it's associated with the region of parsec or a few parsecs from the center that has to do with stuff flowing out from the obscuration and viewed from the side is, you know, produce a reflection. Talk to the X-ray observers.
Yeah, we're definitely going to hear more about this tomorrow. Do you two have very quick comments?
I mean, there's at least some objects where we actually have variability information on the warm absorbers, and in those objects we know at least some components of the warm absorber must be fairly close. So have a small enough recombination time to actually respond. Variability is, I mean, it varies from object to object, of course, but in some objects the variability is there, and it constrains it to be closer than 0.1 or 0.01 parsecs.
I'm nervous. We're sort of going over time, but one last comment.
Okay, changing the subject entirely away from the wind. Isn't the reason that you're finding it so hard to collimate is because you have a radial magnetic field to start with? If you actually had that magnetic field embedded in the differentially rotating disk, wouldn't it be a lot easier to collimate it?
But it's easier, but we don't look for easiest way. We consider the most hardest situation.
Okay, on that note, let's end this session. The next talk will begin at 4:15.